muted.
Everyone, thank you for coming to this presentation. Well, I'm very pleased to present you strong results falling out of the first half of the current financial year, and I think we remain very positive about the future for so long as we have visibility on our future. But this is a period which is characterized by the number 25. Everything looks like coming across as 25. We increased passenger numbers by 25%, revenues up 25%, net profits up 25%, and also we delivered 25% net margin during this period. So essentially we've been able to grow this business by 25% without diluting the profitability of the business. EBITDA margin is up to 43%, and the set net profit delivered on 25% margin. So very robust, very strong financial performance in the period. All these developments obviously have been helped by the strong macroeconomic context in Central and Eastern Europe. GDP development in the region remained robust, and obviously that helped our growth, our ability to continue to stimulate the marketplace. During the period, fairly recently actually, we applied for a UK AOC, so we set up a UK legal entity, and now we are licensing that legal entity to become a UK airline, hopefully starting operations in March 2018. I will elaborate on that later. Free cash exceeded €1 billion euros. That's good. We feel very good about it. I mean, obviously, you may have a question what we're going to be doing with that cash, but we think it is important to remain a formidable competitor in the marketplace and have the options with regard to our financial ability to invest in aircraft later if we wish to do so, or, you know, should we see any opportunities in the marketplace, we could step up on the back of that that liquidity position. As a result of the strong performance in the first half, and we are seeing that that trend continuing into the second half, especially in the current quarter, we are raising our guidance to 265 to 280 million euros of net profit for the full financial year 18. If you look at the operating metrics of the airline during the period, as said, passenger count is up 25% to 15.6 million euros. As we speak, we are operating a fleet of 87 aircraft. This is 14 more than same time last year. We've got 144 airports in the franchise, so we opened up new airports, 14 new airports during the period. We also added countries to the network. Now we operate from 43 countries in total, and we opened up two bases, London Luton and Varna, in the period, and now we have 28 operating bases in 16 countries, and we've got 3,300 employees, 500 more than a year ago. Obviously, with that growth, we operated many more flights than before, 18% more flights. This is reflecting on, you know, the increasing seat count of the aircraft through the deployment of the A321. So we delivered many more passengers than flights, but still, you know, this is 18% more flights. Utilization was up a bit to 13.5 hours. A day per aircraft. This is industry-leading number. Wizz Air operates the highest utilization of fleet in the industry in Europe. Load factor was up to 92.8%, 1.7 percentage points. Regulatory remains the strength of the operating metrics. We operated 99.9% of the flights. We were forced to cancel 110 flights during this 6 months period. Again, this is seen to be best in class in the industry. I mean, some of our competitors, based on some issues and announcements, they were canceling thousands of flights. But our performance is consistent with historical performance of actually delivering the schedule as it is published. Punctuality dropped a little to around 80%. This is because of weather, ATC strikes, and all those sort of constraints. But this is still fairly intact compared to the performance of the industry. This is the fleet growth we are delivering today and the fleet growth in front of us. You see that by the end of the financial year, we're going to be ending off with 92 aircraft. As said, we are currently operating 87. We will start building the A321 proportion of the fleet. So by the end of the financial year, 33% of the seat capacity will be flown on A321s. So the A321 component is becoming chunky. Another year down the line, fiscal 19, we're going to be adding 16 incremental aircraft to the fleet. We will take many more deliveries, but some of the deliveries will be used for replacing existing aircraft. And by the end of fiscal 19, so this is March 2019, 44% of the seats will be flown on AC-21s. A year later, in fiscal 20, we are going to another 17 incremental aircraft, build a fleet to 125 aircraft, and that time, in March 2020, 55% of the seats will be flown on AC-21. So the AC-21 is now really kicking in terms of impact on the business, and we're going to see all the efficiencies on fuel, on overall operating unit cost, coming through the system very robustly. And we're seeing this is a key driver for our cost management going forward. And with that, I will just turn it over to Ian to present the financial results.
Thank you, Joseph. Good morning, everybody. I think as most of you are aware, we want to grow this business as fast as we possibly can and maintain industry-leading margins in terms of EBITDA margins, in terms of net profit margins. It's therefore very pleasing to report a very strong set of first-half results to the 30th of September 2017. We increased passenger numbers by 25%. We delivered an EBITDA margin slightly ahead of last year at 42.8%, so nearly 1 percentage point higher than last year. And we maintained a net profit margin of 25.1%. So these are very strong and arguably some of the highest margins in the industry, which on the back of 25% capacity growth is pretty impressive. If you look at the left of slide 6, these are the building blocks of our growth. So we added 17.8% more aircraft, so that's 13 aircraft in unit terms for the 6 months, the 14 that Joe referred to is as at today. 31% of the seats are now supplied with the A321 aircraft, so therefore seat growth is ahead of aircraft growth, so seat growth at 22.6%. Slightly longer stage length, and it's important to remember that we generally fly around about 25% further than our competition. So it's important when looking at fares versus competition that we actually fly a lot further than our competition in terms of stage length. So our ASK growth was up 24%, and with a higher load factor, we increased load factors by 1.7 percentage points. We delivered passenger growth of 25%, which is particularly impressive. So passenger growth up 25% to 15.6 million. Revenue growth up 25% to 1.15 billion euros. Profit growth up 25% to 288.6 million euros. And a net profit margin of 25.1%. What's very encouraging about the first half, as well as if you look at where we've added the incremental capacity. In the past, we tend to see a skew towards increasing frequency, increasing the density of our over 550 routes. But 53% of our new capacity that was added in the first half is on brand new routes. So it's encouraging to be able to deliver 25% growth, but also delivering it on a very a fairly immature network. That certainly gives some very good signs for the future. So this platform in the first half of 15.6 means that we can grow. We've always said if we have a strong first half, we'll tend to grow fast in the second half. So the 23% in terms of seat growth, we'll be looking to do 23% going forward into the second half. This will deliver us around about 30 million passengers for the full year. On to slide 7. When we issued guidance back in May, we were saying that we were seeing essentially RASK, a flattish RASK for the full year. I think the market took this bit by surprise that we were being a bit bullish, but that's the way we see it. That's the way we see it today. So flattish RASK with a little bit of a bump because of the Easter at both ends of the year. So at the first half, So in the first quarter, there was the Easter. Back in Q1, we said this had a value of about 17 million. And we also have a few days, not a full Easter in the fourth quarter, but there's a few more days of Easter. So flattish RASK for the full year with a little bit of a bump, so slightly positive RASK. And our view has not changed. So that's how we see the revenue environment. Again, given the strong first half, we can grow faster in the second half. So I've had a few calls this morning already of people are saying, why aren't you seeing a slightly stronger performance in Q4? It's important to bear in mind, we're growing 23-24% in the fourth quarter. Last year was 18.7%. So you know, we are all about growth. We believe we want to grow this as fast as we can, but maintain flat margins. So that's essentially why we expect to see flattish RASK with a little bit of upside maybe from the Easter in the fourth quarter. So the platform Q1, we had a very strong Q1. We delivered 58 million euros of profit, and so that, I would say, outperformed, slightly ahead of expectations for us. And the second quarter delivered pretty much in line, so we delivered 231. And therefore, that highlights the real seasonality of this business. If you have a good first half, you can grow faster in the second half. Moving on to the all-important ancillary revenues, again, what some of the highest in the industries and the highest in Europe. The stated target we have is we want to grow ancillary revenue per passenger by 1 euro per year, so this certainly outstrips that. This is a function of two things. One is that we've increased penetration, we've increased conversion in things like allocated seating, partner revenues. If you look at our route mix, you're seeing a lot more leisure routes coming out of Central Eastern Europe. So the partner revenues on hotels and car hire and those sort of things, you're seeing some traction coming through on that. So there's a strong performance on the ancillary revenue in the first half. Looking for the full year, I wouldn't extend that 1.5. I'd say one euro is a fairly sensible assumption. We have changed our large cabin bag policy. That's around about 2 euros per passenger. We've only had 1 week of that in practice, so it's a bit too early to draw conclusions. So what we have been doing, and this is also the other part of the 1.5, is changing the product profile so that customers are more suited to that new cabin bag policy. So customers will be more interested and are paying more for the bundle, the convenience, the priority boarding. They want to take their bag on board. So that'll be something that flows through. In terms of magnitude of that change in cabin bag policy, we don't believe that will have any impact on our revenue per pax. Moving on to costs. If you look at our fares, we delivered 44 euro fares, and the only way you can do that is two things. One is the ancillary we just touched on, but also the cost base. So cost for us is absolutely paramount. It's fair to say that we've had a pretty good cost performance. I'll talk about some of maybe the headwinds on the later slide, but in terms of the opportunities, there's every reason to be very optimistic about our cost base going forward. The A321 that Joseph highlighted earlier, fiscal 20, 55% of our seat count will be delivered by an aircraft that delivers 10% lower unit cost than the A320 and a lot of our peers. So in terms of the cost traction, we will definitely be looking to certainly maintain a flat CASK, but obviously be looking to try and lower that CASK. As the A321s get a higher proportion of the fleet, you're seeing around about between a 1% and a 2% improvement on the structural benefit of that aircraft coming through. Joseph also highlighted the 1 billion in free cash. That strong balance sheet certainly helps us in a lot of other areas, whether it's the lease financing, and we're seeing very, very strong lease markets for us as an airline, and also in terms of other contracts. So you're seeing that strong balance sheet really helping flow through the cost environment. And maybe some specifics in terms of the challenges and the headwinds that we're specifically seeing on the ex-fuel CASK, really. Fuel CASK is really a function of the fuel price, but it's fair to say that we do burn less fuel versus our competition coming through from the A321, the larger aircraft, but also the engine and the initiatives that we drive in the organization. I would highlight two items coming through on the ex-fuel CASK. One is the crew. Crew costs, it's been fairly well documented that the pilot community in Europe is fairly tight. It's been fairly tight for a few years. We don't have any issues with retention, but given the growth trajectory that we are planning and we are delivering, that requires an awful lot of pilots. So we're not immune to that. So I think it's fair to say that the crew cost, the crew CASK, will be slightly up. We do have a structural benefit. You still need two pilots to fly an A321 versus an A320. So there's a structural 2.4% improvement coming through next year on pre-CASK. But given the tight environment, you'll start to see a little bit. So that'll be slightly positive, 1.5%. So that's an area which you can expect a little bit of inflation. The other item is depreciation. We highlighted in May that there's an 18-month blip going through as a function of we have 100% all leased aircraft. And at the end of those leases, you tend to find maintenance events and return conditions on those leases. So the first half was that, I would say, the high point. So if you look at the absolute numbers, the absolute depreciation was up 100%. In ASKs, it was up 60%. Flowing through into the second half, the absolute number will be up around about 35%. In ASK terms, it'll be up more like 10%. As we flow through into fiscal 19, that number will be more normalized. So we have every reason to be optimistic in terms of our cost base. That blip will start to diminish. And I think the only item that I would sort of flag is crew, just as a function of us wanting to grow very, very fast. In terms of the cash, we have 1.029 billion euros of free cash. That's up 255 million versus the start of the year. The slight difference, delta between the profitability and the cash is a function of slightly higher deposits. We did we concluded an extra 10 aircraft order with Airbus during the year. That required a little bit more capex on deposits. Restricted cash also up 10 million or so. So I think what's very pleasing to see is that cash follows the profit. So it's a very cash generative business and will continue to do so. On leverage, that number's slightly improved. It was 1.4 last time we spoke. That's really the function of the translation effects of the dollar leases. So dollar in H1 this year versus H1 last year was 1.12. So essentially that number's just returned back to 1.3. So in terms of the balance sheet, very strong performance continues.
Thank you, Ian.
Well, moving forward, when you look at the markets, we continue to be the number one low-cost carrier in Central and Eastern Europe with 42% of the capacity supplied by us, followed by Ryanair and EasyJet. And I think for the first time for a long period, actually, we are seeing other than the LCC sector also growing in Central and Eastern Europe. So we've seen some growth coming through the legacy carriers. I mean, for example, look, Polish Airlines, was growing 30% during summer, or sponsored by the Polish state. It's all subsidized growth, but nevertheless, it is growth to the market. So when you kind of look at our results, financial results we are reporting, those results were achieved in a capacity-inflated environment in Central and Eastern Europe. Now, as fuel price starts going back up, I think you're going to see some moderation of capacity in the future. We have been building the network in a fairly diverse way. 47% of the new capacity was put on existing routes, and 53% of the new capacity was put on new routes, either by joining existing airports or flying brand new airports, brand new countries. Not only that, but if you look at the way we allocate capacity in terms of traffic direction, CEE to Western Europe is only 72%. It used to be overwhelmingly 80-90% of the capacity. So we are doing now much more on intra-Central and Eastern Europe and other eastward directions as well. And as a result, you can see the sort of countries, but we were just opening Kosovo, Albania, Morocco, Kazakhstan, so kind of pioneering LCC, ULCC in brand new territories as well. We opened 12 new destination points in the network in the first half, putting up 94 routes, so we've been very active in not only deploying capacity on existing services, but continue to build the network. And now we have a network of over 550 routes in total. We continue to innovate. We continue to appeal to the consumer, recognizing the changes in consumer trends. We are the world's sixth largest airline website, following the four U.S. majors, including Southwest and Ryanair. But if you look at it on a relative basis, relative to the size of the passenger franchise, by far Wizz Air.com is the largest airline website in the world compared to any others. 60% of the interactions with consumers are now on smartphones. This may not be that surprising. As a matter of fact, when you look at the average age of a Wizz Air customer, it's around 28 years compared to, you know, some of our rivals, they're above 30, around 35 years. So we are much more reliant on the new generation of customers coming to the market. They are much more savvy with new technologies like smartphones. But I think that also gives us an opportunity because we are really engaging with this new generation of customers, and once we hook them, I think we can make them loyal to the franchise, to the airline. So quite a bit of transition that we have been observing over the past few years. Our website is now geared to the marketplace, recognizing the multinational nature of our markets. We put our website on 24 languages. We are getting over a billion page views. The app is well functioning on 13 languages, 700 million views. So we are very, very active in the digital world to try to appeal to our customers. We continue to bring in new services and new functionalities of our devices. Of course, we continue to innovate our digital approach. So let's spend a bit of time on Wizz Air UK. Maybe just a few highlights why we are doing it and what we are trying to accomplish here. But we are having two thoughts and two strategic considerations when it comes to Wizz Air UK. On the one hand, we're seeing that Brexit is yet uncertain. No one really knows how this is going to play out, and we want to make sure that we play a contingency, and no matter how it unfolds, we are ready to deal with the situation under any circumstances. And we're seeing that Wizz Air UK, being a UK legal entity, a UK airline, would be well positioned to access the market and continue to fly and continue to get access to traffic rights under any circumstances. Secondly, we're seeing that Monarch is not the end, but it's more the beginning of a market consolidation in the United Kingdom. We think Brexit is going to shake up the industry, and we just want to make sure that we stand ready for those opportunities should they arise. Obviously, this is speculative, and you don't know exactly how this is going to unfold, but we just want to make sure that we have a platform that can take advantage of any consolidation opportunities in the marketplace. With that, we decided to turn the London Luton base of Wizz Air Hungary over into Wizz Air UK. As said, Wizz Air UK will become operational in March 2018. Our initial plan is to have three aircraft based in Luton, operated by Wizz Air UK. As of the start, pretty much scaling it up to five and then seven aircraft over the next 2 years. This plan may change depending on the situation. So one of the factors we are actually contemplating is the Monarch slots at Luton. Once we understand what the hell is going on there, we can form an approach how to best go for the opportunity. And again, as other opportunities arise, we would react to that and we would scale up the operations. But we are very excited about this approach, and we think this is going to step change Wizz Air's presence in the UK, and we will be a different airline after following through this initiative. On guidance, we are pretty much seeing the trends what we observed in the first half going into the second half. Obviously, we have some visibility on the current quarter. We have very limited visibility on the last quarter. So with that note, we are guiding the market based on the views how we see the business today. This is not conservative. This is not bullish. This is a realistic view of how we are seeing the business. Capacity is going to go 23%. So second half will be similar to the first half. Load factor will continue to rise in similar fashion as in the first half. We are expecting ex-fuel costs to be flat broadly. This is a little better in the second half than what it was in the first half. Obviously, fuel is the function of the market. As you know, we are hedged on 50% of our requirements over the next 18 months. So we have some protection, but we are not fully protected, you know, from any fuel price changes. Revenue is expected to unfold similarly to the first half, slightly up. And on that basis, we are putting up a new guidance of 265 to 280 million euros to the market. So Justin, in summary again, very strong financial performance in the first half. Everything is up 25%. Passengers, revenues and net profits. We enhanced EBITDA margin performance to 43% and maintained net margin performance at 25%. This is all against a very strong economic backdrop in Central and Eastern Europe. We are very excited about the UK opportunity and the way we are going about it with Wizz Air UK. We built significant liquidity. We got free cash over €1 billion. Euros, and as a result of the strong performance and the visibility what we have in front of us, we improved guidance to 265 to 280 million euros. And with that, I would close the presentation. I would turn it over to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for the speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. So that is 01 to register for a question.
Hi, good morning. It's Rashika from Barclays. Can I ask three questions, please? Firstly, on the growth, you said, you know, 50% is on building frequencies and approximately 50% is on new routes. Is that the kind of the right rate of growth or the profile of growth going forward? And to the extent that you can kind of comment or quantify it, you know, what would the RASK profile look like on the routes where you were building frequency, you know, or put another way, you know, what was the dilution because of the routes, of the new routes? On the second question, just on the free cash flow profile and CapEx in particular, I think looking at your numbers, you had some proceeds from sales of assets. So could you maybe just help us in terms of what you think the gross versus net CapEx profile looks like for the full year? And then very finally on ownership costs. I mean, you touched upon the strong balance sheet and the fact that, you know, at the moment the fleet is fully leased. Are your thoughts around that changing? You know, latest update on that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, let me start with the network development question. I don't think we have a preference for increasing frequencies over new routes or new routes over increasing frequencies. We simply just look at the opportunities of all kinds and try to determine the expected profitability of those opportunities, rank them up, and take the best opportunities. Historically, we ended up with a lot of new routes, obviously, at the beginning when we were just building up the network. Over the past few years, I think we became a bit more skewed towards increasing frequencies on existing routes as we created the backbone of the business and the skeleton of the network. And now it looks like we are doing more new routes than before. But this is simply just a function of the changing circumstances and expected profitability of the various opportunities. So we don't necessarily have a strategy here, but definitely we are seeing maturity coming through the network. We are seeing a diversity coming through the network. So while the network was very skewed towards migration-related travel at the beginning, it is a much more balanced network nowadays. We are building the proportion of leisure traffic, we are building the proportion of business traffic, and obviously with that the proportion of migration-driven traffic is coming down. It is also becoming more diversified in terms of the geographical spread. It used to be much reliant on east-to-west traffic flows. Now we've got quite a bit of east-to-east and also inter-central and eastern Europe. So, and also it is much more diversified in terms of country setup and base setup. As said, you know, we have 28 bases in 16 countries. We fly 43 countries. So this is just a very well diversified network now, and we try to take it from there. But profitability remains our overwhelming priority, and we simply have just not found a better strategy than profit, and this is what we continue to pursue.
I can take the on the CapEx question. I mean, the CapEx for a leased business when you're continuing to take redeliver aircraft and redeliver aircraft to lessors and take new aircraft, it's essentially a bit of a carousel. So the CapEx number I think you're looking at is probably around about 100 million. The number that you had for I would say there's probably no change since the beginning of the year. Yes, there's a little bit more of proceeds coming from some engines. So last year we flagged that we used some of our cash to buy some engines. We did the market for engines, as you could probably imagine, given issues in the engine market, that it's fairly hot. So we took the opportunity to do some sale and lease back to those engines. That will have been offset by some additional cash going out for these 10 extra aircraft. So from a CapEx perspective, there hasn't been any change since the beginning of the year. We don't have a stated guidance on CapEx. It can change, but there's nothing untoward you should be concerned about. And what was the third question?
On ownership.
So can you repeat the third question?
Yes, sorry, just your latest thoughts around ownership costs. So, you know, lease versus ownership. Kind of full ownership and the balance sheet.
Sorry, so I mean the lease market today is actually incredibly hot. I think there are some nervousnesses around about the deliveries of the neo aircraft. They're fairly well documented as well. As a result, you're seeing residual values of the older aircraft increasing. So therefore, when going out, the recent 10 aircraft we've done, we just completed the financing for that are some of the best terms that we have ever seen. So lease versus buy, the leasing market is incredibly hot right now. It's fair to say, Joseph highlighted, that we have $1 billion of cash. We are excited about the NEO aircraft. We take three of those in fiscal 19 and 17 in fiscal 20. So we'll need to make sure that we have the right balance sheet in place at the right credit rating to have the optionality to choose. So in terms of the ownership costs, looking forward, we're very excited either through the lease environment or through the ownership side.
Thank you.
Damien Burrough from Royal Bank of Canada. Two questions, please. First of all, on the growth, the sort of 25% growth, I mean, it doesn't sort of feel like ATC or infrastructure capacity is growing 25% per annum. So how do you think of that going forward in terms of the sort of the limits that might impose on you in certain areas, and how do you plan for that in terms of fleet and aircraft utilization? And is that sort of 13.5 hours utilization still an ongoing figure, or will there have to be some slack in that as the system becomes more pressured? And then secondly, we're already seeing some of these sort of, I guess, CE legacy struggling, Tauron's 50 million loss and the next big restructuring there. When you think about looking to sort of next summer in a tight pilot, high fuel cost, maybe sort of slightly tight infrastructure environment, how do you sort of think about contingencies and ability to sort of move where you're operating if there are some sort of further failures in Eastern Europe?
Okay, with regard to growth, I think we are in a slightly different situation compared to our competitors. We tend to avoid congested infrastructure. We tend to avoid congested areas, congested airports. If you think about it, we have 28 operating bases pretty much all over the place in Central and Eastern Europe. Most of these airports are kind of underdeveloped, underpenetrated regional infrastructure with plenty of opportunities to grow. We tend to prefer secondary regional airports even in Western Europe, so we don't really fly to heavily congested airports in Europe. So we're seeing that infrastructure should not really be a significant constraining factor to our growth going forward. We have been consistently delivering 13.5 hours of utilization in this period of the year. You know, we are delivering on 12.5 throughout the whole financial year. I don't think this is going to dramatically change. I mean, we've been able to scale this business up to around 87 aircraft as we speak. This is the size of the fleet. It should not be changing significantly going forward. I don't think it's going to go much beyond this, but we should be able to hold on to this level of utilization. This is quite core to the business model, to be honest. I mean, you know, we need to do better than our competitors if you're going to deliver this business at lower cost than our competitors, and this is the ultimate goal of the company. With regard to the trading environment in Central and Eastern Europe and the state of the legacy carriers, I think you are right. Should the trading context change to the worse, and you know, the market, you know, would become much firmer than it is today in terms of higher fuel price, maybe some macroeconomic slowdown, I think that should shake out the marketplace. The problem is that simply it is just impossible to calculate, you know, those airline failures, because there are factors which are outside of our controls and outside the kind of economic rationale. We have no idea how governments intervene. Look at Alitalia. This is not in Central Eastern Europe, but I think it's kind of giving you the case. I mean, everyone believed that, the king was dead. When Etihad decided not to further fund the airline, but the king is not dead. I mean, it's still flying, and the Italian government put in 900 million euros. We know Polish Airlines is growing over 30%, and you know they just consumed 400 million euros of loan over the last 2 years, and God knows how the government is funding the airline at the moment. So you have all these irrationalities in the system, but if you really apply a long-term strategic view on the marketplace, most of these airlines should be going out of business one way or another, or should become irrelevant. I mean, if you look at countries like Bulgaria, the local airline, the local national carrier, although that's a private company, Air Bulgaria, has been essentially diminished by the market. Even if they are hanging in, they only operate 5 or 6 aircraft. If you look at Tarom, Romanian Airlines, now we are operating twice the capacity of Tarom as a national carrier in the country of Romania. So they are getting diminished in any event. But yes, of course, I think we try to be ready for these events, and we have our own contingency plans. We simply just don't know how to time those plans, because you know we have been burying a few airlines, but they are still hanging in. But end of the day, long-term strategically, lowest cost will prevail and will win, and all the inefficient capacity and airlines will go away or will get dissolved in the system one way or another.
Thanks. Good morning. It's Jared Carter from UBS. Three if I may. One, can you give us the magic cap multiple now under IFRS 16 that you're thinking of? Two, you are flying further east. So, how far east would you fly, especially, if you're thinking A321 Neo LRs? And then just looking at the AOC, I mean, depending if it's a smooth Brexit, would you still continue to have the UK AOC, or would you reconsider it? Thanks.
I'll answer that. I mean, IFRS 16 obviously is an important change in accounting standards. It's important to note that it hasn't yet been endorsed. Rest assured, we are spent our time analysing what that impact is, but we're not going to give any public comments on that at this stage.
Okay, with regard to expanding the network further east, taking into account the advantage of technology coming to the market. Really, we are not gaining a lot of range on the AC21 simply because we are not operating the AC21 at its maximum takeoff rate, so we are somewhat range limited. So really the range, what we are looking at, whether this is AC20 or AC21, is around 6 hours. And whatever we can do within that range, we'll look at it. I think we built quite a bit of a network to Dubai. By now, we fly a lot to the Canaries in Spain. We actually built quite a significant network to Iceland. So we have been exploring kind of medium haul, if you wish, and we'll continue to do that depending on the market opportunities. But the problem with further east is that it is not only just a commercial decision of the airline, but it is also subject to regulatory discretion. Those countries tend to be fairly regulated based on the kind of old-fashioned bilateral system. So it is a challenge to get traffic rights to a place like Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan and those sort of countries. It is much easier to fly now to Israel or Georgia. So, the system is changing, but, we are subject to that discretion. With regard to the UK AOC, we're going to be doing the UK AOC in any event. But first of all, Brexit is March 2019, or maybe not. But based on the current view, this is the timing of it. I don't think we're going to learn and we're going to know really how Brexit is going to unfold anytime soon. And we just want to make sure that, you know, we have the right contingency from a Brexit perspective. But as I said, the UK AOC is not only for Brexit, it is also for market consolidation opportunities in the UK. And we're seeing that having a local entity with a local AOC, we simply are just better positioned for grabbing those opportunities should they arise. So we do it in any event.
Thanks. Mark Simpson from Goodbody. Just two questions. First off, on fuel hedging, you're 23% covered for FY19. A year ago, you were 33%. We have seen a number of airlines having lower levels of cover going forward. Just wondering if you could take us through your thinking there. Second question, on the lease return related depreciation costs, do they normalize going forward at a nominal level and decline at a CASK level, or are you expecting them to normalize at a CASK level?
On the fuel hedging and 23% versus, I think it's 30%, essentially, the way our hedging policy works is that we do rollover transactions, so every time we go into 1 month, we'll just top up as you go from one quarter to the next. Essentially, all it means is that there's 1 month that we haven't done, so given the fuel prices have risen 15% or so in recent days, weeks, we held off on that transaction, so you'll see us just topping up normally as we move forward. And, what was the second question?
Normalization
depreciation. On a CASK level, you'll start seeing a decline.
I mean, just to comment on this, I think really if you kind of put that in a macro context from the company's perspective, you know, we have been rolling out the AC-21 program. I mean, the AC-21 is the best single-aisle aircraft today to deliver the lowest cost possible, and the AC-21 is achieving 10% lower unit cost than the AC-20, roughly around that number. We have not been able to benefit really from that cost decline because of the headwind coming through lease returns and maintenance accounting. Now, as that issue is sort of getting phased out, you're going to see the AC-21 impact coming through. So you should be seeing actual decline. And in the meantime, the AC-21 proportion is going to just get larger and larger in the business.
And I'll just add to that. I mean, I think we're fairly uniquely positioned in the fact that we have 100% of our fleet leased. And the reason for that is that we're going, as to Joseph pointed out, with the A321, but also the NEO aircraft. I mean, this is a once-in-a-generation change in technology. So we are uniquely placed for that. So that's why in the past few years, the decision of lease versus buy was always skewed towards lease because of the residual value risk. So the function of our fleet as of today is really paying for that choice. But looking forward, I think we're going to be one of the best placed in the industry in terms of fleet evolution.
But I think we also need to add that, you know, there is also headwind out there. I mean, you see the pilot situation is tightening, so that's putting inflationary pressure on the entire system. So it's not only an issue of one airline. I mean, you know, the tight market is affecting all the players in the marketplace. So pilots will become more costly. It will cost more to the company. You know, we have to invest more into pilot trainings, into cadet programs and all those sort of things, you know, to start owning our own destiny as opposed to just being subject to the market. You know, this business is always obviously subject to the macro environment, fuel price, FX and those sort of issues. So it is not just a clear cut that, you know, once we have the AC-21, everything is glorious. But for sure, on a relative terms, relative to our competitors, we should be gaining a competitive advantage as a result of the AC-21 rollover.
Andrew Finch, JP Morgan. Are you seeing the benefit from Ryanair scaling back on your routes or competitive routes, and has that impacted your guidance?
I think we look at life on a longer-term basis than just jumping on the opportunity of the week. You know, we're seeing that Ryanair will come out of this and will fix their issues. Yes, I mean, there have been some opportunities, but I don't think that these opportunities represent structural moves for the business. I wouldn't say that we got overexcited, but at the same time, obviously, we like our competitors struggling.
It's probably worthwhile highlighting, I mean, last year we had some headwinds on capacity, the competitive environment in the fourth quarter. If you, and there was a chart that we showed that actually we were supplying 16% of the additional capacity. So the CEE last year grew at 15% in terms of additional seats. This year it's growing at 14.1%, and we're actually adding 28% of that. So we've gone from a 16% of the growth to 28% of the growth. And you can see that in the environments, whether it's through promotional activities, but you're a lot more in control of your destiny. So yes, there are some airlines trimming a bit of capacity, but fundamentally, we are driving that growth. The additional seats that Wizz Air has put to the market in Q4 is nearly three times the nearest competitor in terms of seats. So we are driving that growth.
Hi, it's James Hollins from Exan. Three from me. Just on the 1.3 times leverage, is that sort of a target you look to maintain, obviously depending on ownership? Or perhaps are you looking at maybe net cash per aircraft, which are certainly EasyJet have done in the past? The second one is on, do you plan on targeting any Monarch slots outside of Luton in the UK? And the third one is load factor. Are you pretty comfortable where we are now? Do you expect to push harder on that, particularly as you go more to the A321s? Thanks.
Hey, leverage for us as an all-lease fleet has tended to be a bit of an output. So I think let's be open about that. So it's not particularly a target. What we're doing right now is, as again, with the NEOs coming online, we want the optionality, and we'll be looking to get a credit rating for the organisation. We're going through that process, and I think that will be the output of making sure what sort of target we'll be getting to. In terms of cash per aircraft, no, that's not something that would feature for us.
Okay, with regard to the Monarch slots, as said, you know, first we need to understand what the hell is going on with those slots. But our interest is limited to Luton, so this is what we are looking at. This is where we have the strong core in the London market, and this is what we want to further build on. With regard to load factors, well, I'm sure that's not going to go beyond 100%. We are at around 92%, so there is some way to go, but we are not a load factor maximizing business. I mean, we are a revenue maximizing business, and load factor is a function of you know, yield is a function of load factor. I think we are approaching an area where it's pretty much maxed out. I mean, there may be another percent here or there, but I think this is quite efficient by now.
Morning, Michael Kuhn from Société Générale. One follow-up on traffic mix. What currently would you say is mix between migration-driven, let's say short-term business trips and leisure, and what different growth rates do you see in those areas? Secondly, on current trading, could you give us an impression on how your current forward load factors look like? And lastly, on guidance, I heard you commenting about it. Still, if I look at the implied H2 guidance, it basically says you expect a modest widening of the losses. Just prudence at the current time, or do you see any specific things? Thank you.
Okay, I take the traffic mix. Mm-hmm. Take the other two. Yeah. Okay. So with regard to the traffic mix, the trend is that the proportion of leisure is growing. The proportion of business is growing. It is the function of the diversification coming through the network development. I mean, we have been launching quite a number of leisure routes recently. Summer leisure, winter leisure as well, and as the network deepens, so we are flying more frequencies on certain routes, obviously it becomes more appealing to the business traveler as well. Roughly speaking, we are seeing business around 10%, leisure around 30-40%, and around a good half would be migration driven. But this is quite an evolution, let's say, versus what we had 5 years ago, where migration-driven traffic was dominating the passenger mix, probably around 75-80%. So, you know, this will further evolve. So you're going to see disproportional growth on leisure and business, and the continuing decline in terms of share of traffic of the migration-driven traffic.
on current trading, in terms of the forward bookings, we're pretty much in line with what we saw last year, so nothing particular spectacular. In terms of, you look at the capacity on monthly basis, I mean, November and February tend to be the weak months, so in terms of the capacity growth, you'll probably be seeing more like a 20% growth in November. I know that wasn't what you asked, but just to give you a flavor of when you see the sort of statistics coming out for November, capacity will be more like 20%. And then in terms of guidance, I think it goes back to the capacity again, because we are looking to grow the fourth quarter somewhere around 23-24% in terms of capacity. That compares to 18.7%. So yes, we are the largest part of the capacity going into the market, but that clearly will be dilutive effect. Yes, there is a bit of an Easter effect, but that enables us to grow faster. So on the back of a very strong first half, we can continue to deliver the schedule that we have of 23%+. So in terms of the revenue environment, it will be, I would say, fairly flattish. In terms of second half loss, yes, there's a little bit of a loss. I mean, if we look at Q4 last year, we lost 20 million in the fourth quarter. Q3 was up around about 13 million or so. So we have October behind us. November, we're sort of halfway through with the forward bookings. It's looking okay. Q4, there's always a little bit of a question mark. So there will be a loss in Q4. The question is the magnitude. And I think that's why, if you look at the guidance, I mean, people have been asking me today about the guidance, how that's evolved throughout the year. In May, we were saying 250 to 270. That was right at the beginning of the year. We make all of our money in the first half. So with our July, we were seeing positive signs for the summer with the forward bookings, and that gave us confidence to raise, with the low fuel prices, raise towards the top end of the 270. Obviously, we now have the summer in the bag. We can then continue with our growth plans. So we still expect to see to lose that money in the second half. But no, I wouldn't say there's anything we're particularly hiding. I think it's just the way we see things today. Are there any questions on the telephone?
Once again, if you do have a question for the speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. We do have a question from the line of Ross Harvey from Davy. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the question. I was looking to try and tease out maybe a generic first look at FY19. I mean, firstly, you might talk about the bankruptcies of Air Berlin, Monarch, Alitalia, how they impact on you. Is there any secondary impacts? And then more so following on from one of the questions earlier around the fuel hedging. I mean, you guys are less than a quarter hedged. Ryanair would be 30% hedged. And, you're all hedged just sub 500, whereas spot, obviously, as of last night, is kind of touching above the 600 level. You might run us through the sequence of events around, competitive responses to that. You'd mentioned when the fuel price is going down that it's a 2 to 3 quarter lagged effect on people's capacity movement. Is it the same on the way up, and just what some of your competitors might be expected to do into next summer in particular?
Okay, maybe I would take the market question with regard to the sort of consolidation process of Europe. I think the fact of the matter is that the consolidation of the deferred airlines, Air Berlin, Monarch, and Alitalia, is not as impressive as you may think. Again, Alitalia is still flying. Air Berlin is pretty much taken apart by Lufthansa and EasyJet, so there isn't a lot of consolidation with regard to overall market capacity, and there is a lot of uncertainty around Monarch, what's going on there, and actually, the infrastructure Monarch has been using, whether or not it becomes accessible to other airlines and what way it becomes accessible to other airlines. I mean, indeed, we are, I think, a big enough airline by now that whatever happens in Europe, we should be looking at those opportunities, and we are doing it. With Air Berlin, the competitive overlap has been almost negligible, so there isn't a lot of upside there. Although we are acting on the situation, so we launched new routes, we launched new capacity that used to be operated by Air Berlin, but it's fairly marginal in the bigger context of the business. Monarch is more interesting given their Luton presence, and as we have been publicly stating a few times, actually we would have an interest to explore opportunities in Luton once we understand what we need to do to get there. And as said, Alitalia is still hanging in, but in a bigger context, we think Europe will go through a consolidation process. I mean, again, if you just look at the U.S. market, you know, four airlines provide 80% of the U.S. capacity. After a very significant consolidation in the early 2000s, some consolidation has been happening in Europe, but not as impressive as in the U.S., and I'm not sure it would ever be as impressive. But certainly we know that there is a big number of ailing and failing carriers, but for various reasons they are still hanging in. I mean, once the economic circumstances, market circumstances harden up on them, we're seeing that, you know, that could be a trigger for further consolidation. But again, you know, there is a lot of irrational elements in the process as well. But strategically, we want to stand ready for those opportunities, and I think we are big enough by now to actually take advantage of such situations. But to what extent this is going to impact our fiscal 19, we are not really planning on it. I think we are a little opportunistic. And as said already, actually we have been driving quite a number of airlines out of business in any event, even if these airlines are still flying, but they are becoming a negligible player in the marketplace after the flight. So we pursue our own strategy, and if something happens, we'll look at it. But we are not betting on airline consolidation.
Maybe just to add, I mean, Air Berlin, there was only one direct competing route, Budapest-Berlin. We've already upped that product, so we've initiated that product. So that's essentially how we would start competing or taking advantage of that. Ross, on your first question, the teasing out something in fiscal 19, I think you'll just have to continue teasing. I think we have forward bookings of, on average, 40 days, 6 weeks. So I think today it's far too early to be able to give any thoughts on fiscal 19 guidance. On the fuel hedging and the fuel position, I think it's always interesting taking a snapshot at a point in time. I think you alluded to the fuel pass-through. We've seen historically that there is a fuel pass-through effect, so as they go up and down, competitors react. The question is the lag, because you need to give airlines sufficient time to pull the capacity. So on average, we've tended to see the fuel pass-through kick in 3 months, and then within 12 months, it's sort of fully flown through. Depending on the time of year, so during the summer, every airline flies as much capacity because you're making money, so the fuel pass-through effect tends to have less impact just before the beginning of the summer, which is what we've seen. I think what's important is relative. We burn less fuel than anybody else in our markets. We have, you know, the A321 is a much larger aircraft. It burns less fuel. The majority of our fleet is sharklets. The average age is four and a half years, so they're much more efficient engines, less downtime, so in terms of burning the fuel. So I think in terms of relative, we're very well placed. Having a look at a particular number, somebody's always slightly better hedged at a point in time, so it's a bit futile to say who's in the best place. But what I would say is that we, with fuel prices, you do start to see competition curbing capacity. We are seeing airlines trimming capacity, certainly in the winter. And if fuel prices continue to rise, you'll probably see that going through to, you know, April, May, maybe less so in the summer period.
Thanks for the feedback.
There are no further audio questions registered. Please go ahead, speakers.
I think there's one further question. Damien.
Thanks. Damien Burrough, RBC again. Can I ask two? One, just sort of for comparative. Of the seats you're planning to sell for summer 18, how much proportionally does the UK change as part of your network, i.e. whatever happens with Brexit, what's the proportional exposure looking like in 18 versus, say, last summer or the summer before? And then secondly, just if I can come back to labour costs, there has started to emerge a view that maybe consolidation in the US hasn't been such a good thing if it empowers labour groups, given US airlines are seeing margin collapse to three-year lows on the back of labour inflation. How much consolidation in your mind is too much consolidation, given it removes sort of labour comps and labour competition in the market?
Maybe I take the first one. Well, we are building our UK business on the back of 8% growth as we speak, compared to 25% of the company. So you see that actually the exposure is proportionately coming down to the UK. Nevertheless, we continue to grow the business in the UK, and I think we must be in the forefront of any airlines doing so. So I think we are optimistic, we are robust in the UK, but at the same time, I think we are also somewhat contingent.
I think it's worth highlighting on the Luton opportunity is that our first flight was Katowice to Luton back in 2004, and every year since then we've been growing. 3 years ago, because of the strong performance of the UK, we were penciling in 32% capacity growth. Now with Brexit, we grew 16% instead. This year, again, it'll be looking at 8%. So I think the UK regions, you probably saw recently, we've been scaling back some of the UK regions. They were softening, something we were flagging for a couple of quarters. So we scale back the UK regions, but the London market is one of the largest aviation markets in Europe. And so we committed to that, and I think that's going to be a strong platform for further growth for us. On to the labour side of the equation, I think it's important to note, I mean, we value the crew, we value the pilots, and I think that's a slightly different attitude to the way we look at the world. We offer great career prospects, whether it's through the cadet program, whether it's through promotions, going from one seat to the other seat. The cabin crew, they have strong career prospects, and they have opportunities to become base managers, regional managers, etc. So I think it's fair to say that the retention side of the equation, we have no issues with that. We have a very content workforce, and the management team works incredibly hard on base visits to make sure that we're very attentive and making sure that they have as much attention as they need. In terms of your comment in comparison to the US, I think it's a slightly different equation. We're in 43 countries, and we have bases, I think, now in 16 countries, as opposed to the US, which I think is a slightly different kettle of fish. So with that, I think, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for calling in and coming today, and thanks for your questions.
Thank you.